after that, so that kind of wrapped up just the definitions and understanding of what spiritual abuse and trauma does. And then the past couple weeks, we've been talking about healthy authority and how to re-engage in community and the church. We discussed boundaries and started the idea of planting the seed for forgiveness, recognizing that forgiveness is a process. And then last week, we were talking about living wisely after church hurt or abuse. And today, we're discussing how to live, how to walk wisely and faithfully in imperfect churches. So a couple weeks ago, we were talking about the spectrum and how levels 1 and 2 out of 6 they're healthy. And then 3, 4, 5, and 6 were unhealthy. And so we determined that maybe chapel is within 1 or 2. And so we are discussing that all churches are imperfect because we are broken people trying to uphold a perfect system, God's law. And so today we're going to try and answer the question, after we experience church hurt, how do we remain discerning without being cynical? If you remember last week, we were talking about two extremes. On one hand, we were talking about cynicism and how people respond. So people typically respond in two ways when they experience some sort of church hurt or spiritual abuse. One is cynicism, and the other is overtrusting. And so how do we remain discerning without being cynical? How do we remain open without being naive or overtrusting? How do we participate honestly in recognizing imperfect churches? And how do we walk faithfully in Christian community once again after the hurt? And so our challenge is that after church hurt, it's learning how to remain both wise and relationally engaged. We are discussing the nervous system and the three parts of the nervous system: the prefrontal cortex, right here behind your forehead, the amygdala, which is in the center of your brain, and then the brainstem, which is in the bottom or the base of your neck. And so we are discussing how the nervous system, once that's activated, that it can cause distrust in relationships and in community. And so the goal is not finding a perfect church, because we'll never find it. The goal is not to never experience disappointment once again. The goal is not to avoid all conflict or all relationships. And the goal is not trusting everyone instantaneously or immediately. The goal is not becoming endlessly suspicious of every disagreement or conflict that arises. And the goal is not to emotionally withdraw from Christian community. The goal is wisdom, understanding how we can use wisdom in relationships, understanding discernment, using humility, having grounded participation within that community, in those ministries, in the church. We talked a lot about maintaining healthy boundaries, because boundaries aren't punishments, it's protection, and boundaries aren't just for crisis situations. The goal is thoughtful trust and faithful Christian community. And so our key here for this section is that Christian maturity involves learning how to participate wisely, humbly, and faithfully within that imperfect community. Next, I want to talk about mature discernment. And so our working definition this morning is that mature discernment is the ability to engage church life thoughtfully, humbly, and wisely while evaluating patterns over time instead of reacting impulsively. If you recall, when we experience hurt, the nervous system associates that hurt with those reactions, and we typically respond emotionally, not logically. And so discernment allows us to give us space to respond logically, not reacting impulsively. And so here's just a few characteristics of the difference between reactive responses and mature discernment. I believe they're on your handout, but the key here is that mature discernment is usually slower, humbler, and more reflective than reactive responses. And so an important clarification is that healthy churches are still imperfect churches. That healthy churches still experience, because we're broken, conflict, misunderstanding, personality differences, imperfect leadership, disappointment, and ordinary human weakness. And so the important distinction is that imperfection does not automatically mean or equal abuse or spiritual harm. The mere fact that the presence of imperfection does not necessarily mean a church is unhealthy. And so here's just a quick understanding in how the nervous system plays a role into spiritual harm, is that when someone doesn't experience church hurt, relationships and trust come easily. Disagreements feel manageable. Church feels emotionally safe and physically safe. But when someone experiences the hurt from a leader in a church or another member, perhaps, the nervous system and the hypervigilance and caution increases. Ambiguity feels threatening because it's not predictable or stable. Leadership becomes harder to trust. And so here is our key here, mature discernment. Trust becomes thoughtful rather than automatic. Caution becomes grounded rather than fear-driven. And engagement becomes wiser rather than avoidant. For when it comes to living faithfully in imperfect churches, our working definition here is that participating wisely, humbly, and consistently in Christian community while recognizing that no church or believer will be perfect. And so some characteristics of living faithfully in imperfect churches: it requires humility, patience, forgiveness, boundaries, discernment, accountability, grace, honesty, and relational maturity. And so the key here is that healthy Christian community needs both wisdom and relational vulnerability. I want to give us a case study to see how this plays out. Shane has been attending his PCA church for over a year. As he becomes more connected, he notices leadership occasionally makes imperfect decisions. Members sometimes misunderstand one another. Conflict still exists, and church life can feel messy at times. Some moments trigger his old fears. What if this becomes unhealthy once again? So instead of reacting quickly, Shane slows down and asks several questions internally. Are there repeated harmful patterns? Is there humility and accountability within the leadership? Can disagreements happen honestly and safely? Are mistakes acknowledged and addressed? And so over time, he notices leaders are teachable, conflict is handled respectfully, and imperfection does not automatically create fear or control. And so Shane slowly realizes healthy churches are not perfect churches. They are churches willing to handle imperfection with humility, accountability, grace, and truth. Comments or questions so far? No. All right. I want to give you a few scenarios that I think are pretty common, and when I meet with patients who have experienced church hurt. And so scenario one is a sermon that you disagree with. Say that you hear a sermon application that you think is unbalanced or incomplete. A few possible reactions is that this church is becoming unhealthy. Remember, these are automatic negative responses, is how a counselor would say that. These are automatically negative core beliefs that these possible reactions are. So the church is becoming unhealthy. I should ignore my concerns completely. Maybe I should stop attending. And so our mature discernment reflects before reacting, considers whether this is a pattern or an isolated moment, asks thoughtful questions to elders or other members if needed, and remains engaged while evaluating over time. Another scenario. Someone is feeling left out socially. You notice that friendships and social groups in the church seem established and you feel disconnected or overlooked. Some possible reactions here are you're assuming that people are intentionally excluding you, emotionally withdrawing from you, and deciding that the church is uncaring. Here, our mature discernment recognizes that imperfect community can still be healthy, allowing relationships to develop gradually and organically, initiating connection instead of assuming rejection, and distinguishing loneliness from intentional harm. Feel free, if you have thoughts or comments or any of these apply to you, or you know someone that has this applies to, and you've talked to them, feel free to share a comment or anything like that. I'm going to keep going. Scenario 3, leadership makes a decision you dislike. One elder makes a ministry decision you disagree with. Some possible reactions is that it's assuming bad motives. You're becoming cynical, treating disagreements as betrayal, and immediately disengaging from the community or the church. Here, our mature discernment is recognizing disagreement is normal in church life, evaluating how leadership handles feedback, observing humility and accountability, and remaining thoughtful rather than reactive. Comments or questions with this one? Scenario 4, I have 2 more. An awkward or hurtful interaction. A church member says something insensitive or dismissive towards a conversation. Your possible reaction is that you're interpreting the interaction as evidence the church is unsafe. We're withdrawing relationally and emotionally. We're replaying the interaction repeatedly over and over and over again. Mature discernment says that recognizing that Christians can act imperfectly, we continue to evaluate whether this is a harmful pattern over time. We're pursuing clarification with that person, if appropriate, and we're allowing room for misunderstanding, forgiveness, and growth. Comments or questions with this one?
I find that this is something, to me, this is more common than elders making a decision that I disagree with. For example, I know someone whose mother committed suicide when he was 6, and people in a church told him, well, his mother could never be in heaven. Another person's mother had her when she was 16, and so comments were made to her about that. Well, unfortunately, those two people then have no interest in going to church. It isn't that these were young people that were hurt by these comments. To me, it's hard to know. I mean, prayer, of course, is the most important, the biggest thing. And then how to approach that. It isn't two adult Christians having a misunderstanding and therefore trying to talk it out. It's things, maybe they weren't trying to be hurtful, but they were. They were insensitive. How to talk to someone that has been hurt like that is a question for me.
I hear you saying, Kathy, that your question is how do you approach someone who has been hurt by comments being made that maybe that person wholeheartedly believed that, but it was very insensitive. I would just say, yeah, number one, prayer. Number two, I think, is just being there as a godly friend to be with them and to maybe talk through some of those difficult conversations if they feel comfortable talking about it with you. I'd just continue to encourage you to have those consistent interactions, and that we're seed planters. The Lord uses us in one situation and in hopes and that someone else can be used to water that seed and to grow it. And so just I would encourage you to keep having those conversations, keep praying for them. So
yeah.
Pray for opportunities to have those conversations. Absolutely. Yeah, well said. Any other comments or questions? All right. And finally, scenario 5, conflict between church members. You become aware of tension or disagreement between respected church members. So some possible automatic thoughts. You idealize one side and demonize the other. Assume conflict means the church is unhealthy. Emotionally distance yourself from everyone involved. Mature discernment is recognizing conflicts exist in all communities, observing how conflict is handled, looking for humility, accountability, and reconciliation, and resisting quick conclusions. I think that can be hard sometimes. Any comments or questions with this one?
I think within the Christian community, and especially in a church, I think the politics of the culture can really breed some of what you're talking about, that tension. And although I have not seen it here, I've not been everywhere everybody else has been, but I would certainly hope that if we had those kind of conflicts, and one of my best friends is on the opposite side than I am, and we've never had that conflict, because I think in the maturity of our being a Christian is to respect the fact that that person has a different point of view than you do, and you may or may not ever change their mind. That's not the point of it. But it's the relationship that counts. And I think that is such an important thing for us to remember. I would not want anything to hurt that relationship. And so I'm careful, she's careful. And that's why we can maintain such a fabulous relationship.
Thank you, Kaylin. Yeah, absolutely. So the mutual respect and recognizing that we have different worldviews, and that's okay. We can agree to disagree and still love and care for each other. Yeah. Other comments, questions? Quiet group this morning. We may end early. I don't know. We'll see. For this section, just kind of some closing insights. For each scenario, living faithfully in imperfect churches requires learning to tolerate discomfort, distinguish imperfection from harm. That's the key here, and that's been our entire conversation, is that when we've been hurt spiritually, our nervous system automatically wants to respond, and so it's learning to recognize over time, is this a pattern or is this just an unintentional harm? The other thing is we want to remain relationally engaged. Specifically when it comes to trauma, relationships are one of the first things that gets distorted. And practicing discernment with humility and patience over time. Any comments or questions so far?
So much of this is just reminding me as a person in the church that we can continue to grow. Like, it's not just our leadership that has responsibility for health and church community. They obviously guide the ship, and their actions and decisions have maybe a bigger impact. But a lot of these things are things that we can contribute to having a healthy church community by dealing with conflict well, by building strong relationships, by a lot of things that are bringing up things that we talk about for marriage, like not just saying, well, this is the way I am, you have to accept me, but trying to grow in relational health with everybody, and not thinking that people can read our minds, and all kinds of healthy things we could be doing in our relationships in the church to make it a place where people will feel the health and see the vulnerability. And that's our responsibility too, I think, not just the elders and leaders.
Well said. Mim, I like what you're saying. It's like the culture in as members, but then also the wisdom and guidance from the elders, and they work hand in hand together. Yeah, well said. Any other comments or questions?
I have a comment about the imperfection in our leaders. So definitely, we are all imperfect, so we expect our leaders to be the perfect ones. At the end of the day, we just have to regard that we are all human and we are imperfect. Even our pastor is not Jesus, so he can go astray as well. My question is, how do you stay in faith in a church? Of course, it's an imperfect church, but some of the leaders have done like awful stuff, like using young girls and all that. But also at the end of the day, they come to the community and apologize. But how do you keep faith in such a church?
Yeah, thank you, Sue. First off, I want to validate that yeah. I think there is a tendency for us that when we look at leaders, we have this higher standard for them, and sometimes we pressure them or we feel that they can't make mistakes. But like you said, we're all broken and we all make mistakes. So appreciated that. The second point is, you're asking, how do we be faithful when leaders hurt us? And I would say, again, this goes back to discernment and recognizing, is it a pattern? Are they genuine in their apologies? Or are they continuing to do what they've been doing and then just apologize again? And it's a cycle. So they harm, they apologize, they harm, they apologize. So if that's the pattern, then I would say that can be very difficult and probably needs to be addressed. But if you feel that there is genuine and their and sincerity in their apology, then I think that's where we can move towards reconciliation, perhaps. Yeah. Do you have any other follow-up questions or comments? Yes.
This is more like forgiveness, because sometimes when someone does something wrong to you, it depends on how much they have hurt you. So with something small, it's easy to move on and forgive. But if it's like something really bad, the only thing you have in mind is to go to another church or go to another community. Because when you stay there, it's just gonna keep haunting you. Maybe my question is, like, do you keep in that church until your faith or in the leader is back, or do you at some point decide to move on?
You're bringing up a really good point. So forgiveness has built-in boundaries. So when it comes to forgiveness, you can forgive, because forgiveness is not forgetting or just acknowledging or admitting that it's okay for them to continue to do that. Forgiveness, you can modify the relationship. You can return the relationship as it once was, or you can cut that person off. And so forgiveness has three types of boundaries built in. The other piece, I think it's nuanced. I think it really depends on the specifics of your example. I would say that if it's abuse or spiritual harm, then I would highly recommend looking into finding a new church. But being prayerful through that situation as well. But if it's something that can be addressed through other leaders, or you do feel that these leaders are genuine in their apology, then I think you can remain faithful and that the Lord can use that to continue to grow the church. So, any other comments or questions?
So I just want to add to what you said, Dylan, because I think, a genuine apology is really, important, but I think there also needs to be accountability structures in place, right? So it's not just, the elders have been financially unfaithful with the church's money and we're just going to let them go, right? We're going to put structures in place to hold people accountable and help rebuild that trust.
Thank you, Lydia. Yes, absolutely. So part of that is not only recognizing if their apology is sincere and genuine, but also that is part of the structure of churches, right? Is the accountability, a healthy church, is that accountability piece. And a follow-up from another elder or denomination leader would be part of the healthy structure. Thank you.
I was just going to add to that. You had mentioned waiting to see what kind of patterns emerge, but I think there are some sins that you can't wait to see if it happens again. So the example that Sue gave, that's not something you wait and see if a pastor does that again. I would leave that church immediately. I feel like police should be called. Like, that's not... I don't know. So I feel like there's certain things, certain mistakes, sure, you could wait on patterns, but others, you absolutely cannot.
Agreed. And I think that's why some of what we've been talking about is so nuanced. It's so hard to necessarily categorize, identify, because churches are so individualized and these relationships... it's hard for me to respond to each one because I don't know all the details. But you're right. You're right, Peggy. If there is sexual abuse or some sort of coercion or manipulation or criminal activity, of course, we want to get others involved and maybe not continue to attend there. Absolutely.
I was going to kind of say what Lydia and Peggy were both saying, but like with a situation like that, like as it, just for example, as like a youth group leader and like, or just in general being a mandated reporter, there are safeguards in place in every like institution or organization like our church. If you see something, say something seems like a cliche thing, but it's the honest truth. And there's things in place that if those things aren't being followed in a church, in an organization, in a place, it's probably not a safe place to be. And that's where discernment would come in and having the mind of Christ. And if leadership isn't following those things, then, you can kind of, something I grew up learning, which I'm not just saying this because my parents are sitting beside me, but, test it against scripture. If it doesn't make sense according to what God's word says, and if they're not a Bible-believing church, they're not following what God's word says, then why are you there in the first place? So if you can wait and see, but like Peggy said, like in those situations, like you can be faithful and you can be wise and you can be loving and forgiving. But if it's like putting obviously yourself or your children in danger or somebody else's children, go away, and the Lord will give you wisdom and discernment if potentially you are to return, but just being wise and discerning and having the mind of Christ. And if God gives you peace about something, then sure, great. But, you know, just have the mind of Christ.
Thank you, Sarah. Just adding on to that, right, we've talked about what unhealthy churches look like, and part of that is not having those safeguards in place. Part of that is not having the accountability from leaders or denominations. And so, absolutely, yeah, well said. Good comments. Anyone else?
I think the other thing that can be really difficult is that often when there is that kind of physical, emotional, like usually there's not just one of those kinds of abuses that's present. If there's somebody who's sexually abusing somebody, usually they're spiritually abusing them as well, if it's a leadership person, and probably emotionally as well. And so there can be that difficult question of, well, you know, if you're the one who's being hurt by the church and you're being told, if you say something, it will hurt the church and God will be upset with you. And, you know, those are, I don't really have a good I don't have advice for that, except to recognize that and to go and talk to somebody else. But I think that those are some of the complicating factors, is that usually it's not just one kind of abuse that's being put on people. And I think the other thing that, you know, not in those kind of extreme situations, the other difficulty is, you know, when we join the church, we make vows as members of the church, and those are serious vows. And so the decision to leave a church, you know, I've been in situations where people have left the church quickly because of presumed church hurt, and they've hurt my church because they've not kept their vows. And so there's also, like, they didn't pursue reconciliation, they just gave up. And so, and that would not be in those extreme situations. I don't want to give the impression I'm talking about those extreme situations where you should just leave. But I think that's part of what is why we need this maturity and discernment and good leadership and seeking counsel and humility, because all of those factors are in play, and that's part of the beauty of being part of a community of Christ, but it's also part of the when our sin really messes things up. So.
And on top of that, Mim, I think that's why it's why I love coming to chapel, is we have all those things. We have all those protective factors in this system that avoids these really complex situations that we're talking about. It's heartbreaking to hear someone come to me in session saying, my church doesn't listen to me, or I've experienced this, and there's no follow-up, and there's no accountability. That's, again, what we've been talking about this entire time, is that there are systems that don't have the accountability, the transparency, the leadership, wisdom that we do. So.
Dylan, my comment was kind of going to be on that. Like, if you're in an unhealthy church, that's your culture that you know, and you might not know it's unhealthy. And I was thinking, especially like what Sue brought up, people maybe with different cultural backgrounds, like my parents work in Papua New Guinea, I grew up there, and it's very common, like they have church there, but it's very different than the structure of church here. And it, although they would, like, you know, discipline people, like publicly, you know, kick them out of the church for certain sins, other sins are socially acceptable. For example, like, usually the men are very physically abusive with wives and with women, and women are viewed more of a lower status there, and it's just what it is, and that's not something that they would necessarily teach against in church. And that's something that's really hard for my parents, you know, because they're in their culture, and it's hard, like they want to speak out on that, but it's something that's hard to do when the whole culture views it as okay. So like things like that, it's difficult because, yeah, just different cultural backgrounds. And if you're in something that's unhealthy and that's all you know, it would be really hard to maybe leave or speak out against that. So
it's hard to respond to that, just because I would agree. I think that people get stuck in unhealthy systems, and there's so much fear, as we were talking, Pastor Thomas talking about this morning. there's so much fear to leave that because there is a grieving process. Like, if I leave, then I'm losing my entire community, my support system. I'll be alone. And so there is that added layer that we don't really think about because we have such good positive supports here. And so, you know, that is that cultural piece. And it just, again, shows the complexity of some of these nuanced situations and spiritual abuse. So thanks for sharing. Great conversation. Anyone else? All right. Here's our hope. Healing after church hurt is not about rebuilding trust. It's not only about rebuilding trust in others. It's also about allowing the Lord to gradually renew how we think, discern, and relate to participate in Christian community. Healthy Christian community requires wisdom and openness, discernment and humility, boundaries and participation, truth and grace. Christian maturity is not blind trust, emotional isolation, fear-driven withdrawal, or perfectionism. And so our key here is that is understanding healthy community requires balancing wisdom with relational engagement. And here's our anchor scripture verse: do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. The renewing of the mind includes learning to think clearly instead of reacting impulsively. Distinguish discernment from fear. Tolerate complexity and imperfection. Rebuild trust wisely over time. Remain grounded in truth rather than suspicion or over-trusting or being naive. And engage Christian community with wisdom and humiliation. Humility, not humiliation. I say that every time. And so here's the reaction versus our renewal. So when we react in our thinking, I must figure out this immediately. Discomfort means danger or abuse. I can never trust anyone again. Everything's fine. I need certainty. And so when we think about renewing our mind and our thinking, wisdom often develops over time. Discomfort and harm are not always the same. We can make room for both. Trust can be rebuilt wisely and gradually. Discernment still matters. And maturity tolerates some complexity. So just a couple of scenarios here. So after a church service, an elder walks past you quickly without stopping to talk. Immediately you begin thinking, he must be upset with me. Maybe I did something wrong. People here probably don't actually care. And so the reactive thinking is assuming motives quickly, personalizing limited information, interpreting ambiguity negatively, and reacting from insecurity or past hurt. So our renewed thinking says, I do not have the full picture. One interaction does not define the entire relationship. I should avoid jumping to conclusions. And so the key is that renewing the mind often involves slowing down our automatic assumptions and allowing room for humility, patience, and a clear interpretation. Comments or questions with this scenario? Scenario two. You begin developing healthy relations at church, but after feeling emotionally connected, fear suddenly resurfaces. What if I trust people again and get hurt? Maybe I should pull back emotionally before I become too involved. So the reactive thinking is emotionally withdrawing from that relationship or that church. Fear-driven distancing. Assuming vulnerability always leads to harm, self-protection through isolation. And so our renewed thinking says wisdom and vulnerability can exist together, trust and development gradually and thoughtfully. Remaining relationally engaged does not require blind trust. And so our key here is renewing the mind involves learning how to remain grounded and relationally open while still participating and practicing wisdom and discernment. Comments or questions with this scenario? In both scenarios, the renewing of the mind helps us slow reactive thinking. Again, the nervous system, the alarm system is going off, and it's always making these safety precautions, right? So the nervous system doesn't measure time, it measures safety. And so also the renewing of the mind helps us evaluate situations wisely, distinguishes fear from discernment, and allows us to participate faithfully within an imperfect church or community. Comments or questions with this section? All right, only a couple more minutes, and this is the final section. Wrapping things up, church hurt can deeply affect trust. Trust in people, trust in leadership, trust in churches. It impacts and affects our perception of others, leaders, ourselves, and sometimes God as well. It affects our relationships, and it impacts our Christian community. But healing does not require pretending pain never happened. It does not require abandoning discernment, and it does not require withdrawing from the church entirely. Healing and faithful participation can coexist with wisdom, discernment, and realistic expectations. Through wisdom, discernment, humility, and renewing of the mind, we can gradually learn to participate thoughtfully, trust wisely, remain grounded, and walk faithfully within an imperfect Christian community. And so our goal here is not to retreat from the church, nor to rush back to it, but to walk wisely, slowly, and faithfully in Christian community. Final questions or comments for the entire series?
So much of what you're talking about is about not rushing to conclusions, not making assumptions, not automatically assuming the worst about somebody else when they do something that you perceive as incorrect. I would just encourage all of us to apply this to all kinds of aspects of life. In the world that I'm in, this is just status quo, like automatically knee-jerk reactions. And it's not just while you're in Harrisburg, but while you're all over the place locally, and it's not just one side or the other doing it, it's pretty much everywhere. And my guess is, though I'm not in every other context, my guess is this is a issue within our culture, and honestly, it's probably just a human nature issue that's been around since the beginning of time. But just having this approach to what you're talking about, I see it as absolutely essential in every aspect of our lives.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. Well said. Yep. Thanks, Matt.
I think, too, we are not we're not drawn to attend a church building. We are led to belong to the church of God, the fellowship of God, the fellowship, the community of church, not in a building, but the church of Christ. And whether we're in a building that mistreats us or whether we're in a building that loves us completely, we are God's children, and He wants the very best for us. So we have a duty to make sure that we are in a situation where we are learning the most we possibly can about Him.
That's it.
Thank you, Kaylin. Final thought.
And just taking it, kind of going along with what Kaylin has said, for me personally, when I have experienced hurt, the best thing is not whether I find a Christian community, but walking with Jesus. In fact, meditating upon who I am in Christ, and just that he is always with me. He is always helping me. And I am his beloved, as one of our songs said this morning. And not just giving lip service to that, but really, really letting that sink in. And just one time sinking in doesn't do it. It has to be a practice. It has to be a steady flow of letting the Spirit talk to my spirit.
Thank you, everyone, for allowing this opportunity for me. I've always enjoyed this, and it's a great honor. So thank you. Thank you for those that participated and asked questions. I'd be happy to send you my slide deck. If anyone is interested, you can contact me or Adrian, and she can get a hold of me. Thank you again, and I hope you guys have a great rest of your day.